Hi, I'm Jada Cesar, mental health and body positive advocate.
And I'm Louise Troen, the Vice President of International Marketing and Communications at Bumble.
And welcome to Unsubscribe, the podcast that aims to help you unsubscribe from the negative habits in your life and resubscribe to healthier, happier modes of living. We're joined by a host of amazing guests for our first series who are pioneering the way in their respective industries and breaking boundaries along the way.
This podcast is brought to you by Bumble, and we are the social networking app that's focused on encouraging women to make the first move in love, in friendship, and in business. The first movers on this podcast are real testament to what can be achieved when you go after exactly what you want.
I was fighting this during Brexit, do you know what I mean? They just have so much on. And I even feel like this now, like the amount of stuff I get asked to do now that I just can't, like the emails about helping with people's dissertations or like with their school projects and all these things I really want to do. Someone, can you just post this? Or can you give me advice on this? Or I was sexually assaulted, I need you to talk to me about this. And the amount of messages, I'm like, I don't have the capacity to be able to deal with all those. And I can see that the government has to put up barriers, because if they don't, everyone will smash them with this and they don't have time for all of us. So they have to be very kind of hard line with me. And only when they trusted me did they let me in more.
How did you push over the mark?
The thing that changed things, I think, well, I think the format of the team that me and Ryan had changed things a lot, because it was there was like the plucky, like grassroots activist who had the passion, which was me. And then that was grounded by the incredibly politically astute and strategic lawyer, which was Ryan. And that combination was quite different. People haven't really done that before in Parliament. It's usually groups or it's functional, legal, or it's just campaigners. Mm-hmm. That was quite a powerful combination. But having done all the work up front was how we pushed through, I think. We went around the UK and got all the best law authorities in the UK, from all the top universities, from all the big law firms in Ireland, Wales, Scotland, England, to look over legislation, to help Ryan write the legislation, and then to agree on it before we even stepped foot in there. So before we'd even gone into Parliament, we weren't going in going, there's a problem, you need to do something about it. Because they go, yeah, there's loads of problems, help us do something about it. Instead, we were going, we've done 6 months of work, here's your legislation, here's how you solve it, there's two pieces of paper in front of you, here's all the people that agree, all we need to do is just support it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really made them go, oh, okay, these people know what they're on about, they're not just leaving the problems to us and asking us to solve it, which was, I think, massive.
Okay, so we're going to go back.
Yes, sorry.
For anyone. No, don't be sorry. I mean, Jada and I know and love everything that you've done and everything you're doing and everything we know you will continue to do. But we just want to take it back for people that might be new to this podcast or to meeting you, and talk a little bit about the experience that you went through, what it made you feel, what you campaigned for. And then we're going to delve into a little bit around what that means for the future of women and you in particular. So take us back to the festival.
Okay. I might cry though, is that right?
We've had lots of people.
Every time I talk about it, I get upset.
And don't feel like you have to either.
No, that's really nice. I think it's good though to talk about it. So July 2017, so I was at British Summertime Festival, my sister, and that year I was 25. My sister was my age now, almost. And we didn't have any much money and we were just working really hard, and we really wanted to go to a festival. We really wanted to spend time together, but you know, in London, it's so hard to find the time to just actually spend a day with each other because we're both working so hard. So we bought like £85 tickets to one day at British Summertime Festival, which neither of us could afford because the Killers were playing. And when we were kids, we used to grow up to their music. Like that was our favourite band when we were kids. So we're dead excited, got dressed up. It was like a really hot summer. It was like 30 degree day. And we just went there for the day and we're like messing around, having a great time. And then we pushed our way into the crowd to wait for the Killers to come on. It was broad daylight. It was like 6 o'clock or something. And it was a 60,000 person crowd. So it was a big crowd. And we're sort of halfway in. So you're pretty smashed up against people, but you've got a bit of wiggle room. These guys, he started talking to me. Then he started hitting on me. Then he started making jokes. And my sister's so the opposite of me. I will make friends with like a chair. Like I'm so down for talking to anyone. Whereas my sister's got really clear boundaries. And she immediately was like, she says now, you know, I could tell that was going to turn into something, that they were going to be annoying. But I just give everyone the benefit of the doubt. And I wasn't biting and they kept hitting on me. And then I said no. And then he made a joke quite loudly. He said something, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I think it was something like, oh, I bet she's good at blowjobs or something, really loud. And me and my sister just like were like, oh, okay, here we are. Of course it was going here. Great. Mm-hmm. And he was obviously quite, one of these guys in particular was quite pissed off. And then about 2 minutes later, he brushed up against me and I didn't really think anything of it because you're in a crowd that's massive. And then a couple minutes after that, one of them was standing in front of me, big dude, big blonde dude, massive guy. And he was on his phone, and on WhatsApp he'd been sent a photo like super, super close, 2 inches, 3 inches maybe from someone's crotch, like up underneath their skirt. And I obviously immediately knew it was me, like I could just tell. And it was like such a gross picture as well. Like it was just so well taken. It wasn't blurry. It was like perfectly taken. It was just like my underwear was all twisted. And it was just like, you know, I saw it and I was like, fuck, like, of course. Mm. Of course, that's what you've done. And I grabbed the phone off him because I didn't even think, like, I just saw it and was so angry. I guess the instinct was to get the picture off him. So I just like grabbed the phone and held it up and was shouting that he'd taken these pictures. And he got really defensive and he was like, no, I'm taking a picture of the stage. And then he grabbed me and then he was shaking me, I guess, trying to get the phone off me. So I like slapped him. And this woman next to me, and I still don't know who she is. We'd been talking a bit before the gig. And I've wanted to find her through this whole campaign because she just went, give me the phone, and I passed the phone to her. And she held it behind her back and he got in her face. He was so scary, this dude. And he was screaming in her face, like spitting in her face. She was like, no, she wouldn't give it him back. And then these two guys pushed him and she handed me the phone and I ran off to security really fast through this crowd, basically knocking people out of the way, crying. And he came after me quite quickly. Which was like such a gross experience because, you know, when you have those dreams where you can hear someone chasing you.
Yeah.
It was literally like that. Like I was like, oh, I've lost him. And then I turned around and he was like hurling at me. Like it was so scary.
But also through the sea of that many people and the music, it's like a nightmare.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's hectic, the whole thing. And it was crazy because as I was running, they came on stage. So everyone was like screaming and I couldn't get through people. It was horrible. Mm. And then by chance, we'd been sitting at the security gate before we went into the crowd, which is partly in part to my boyfriend, and whenever I go to a public place, he's like, know where the exit is, know where the security is, and I do it every time, and I'm so glad I did that night. And I ran to security, and they obviously saw like a young girl running towards them crying with a massive guy chasing her, so they circled me, and he jumped over them and tried to like swipe at me. He was really upset that I'd rumbled him, I think. Well, I can tell because he was very angry. And then the police came, and I just gave, the security gave them the phone, and the guy, and the picture was on there, so it's like, we talk so much with victims about what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you need to do? What does the victim need to do? It's like, I couldn't have done more. We had witnesses. I had all the security knew about it. I had the phone, I had the picture, I had the guy. Mm. Like, what more can you hand in? And they separated us, deleted the photo, which was obviously my evidence, but in the state I was in, I didn't even think. And then they were really lovely, but they were just like, there's nothing we can do, I'm really sorry, like, you're wearing knickers, so it's not a graphic image. If you weren't wearing knickers, maybe we could do something, but we can't. And I was like, right, okay, so there's, okay. They were like, do you want to make a statement now anyway? But it's like, by that point, you're like, well, no, I don't want to stand here for 40 minutes and recount it, because I mean, I can't stop crying, and you've told me there's nothing I can do. Yeah. So, and I think we all have that thing where we just want to get back to normalcy anyway, so I was like, I just want to go and dance, like, I was going to go and have a great time after that, but whatever. They separated us. I don't even think they kicked him out. I think they basically were like, carry on with your night. So I went back into the crowd with Stevie. We were both crying. She was really upset. I was obviously really upset. And then missed most of the gig. And then saw the last three songs maybe. There was a really nice guy actually standing next to us when I went back into the crowd, and he was really lovely to me. And I remember thinking like, I'm so glad I stood next to him. He was like singing with me and like dancing with me. It was really nice. And then I went home, and then 3 days later, the police called and they were like, oh, your case is closed, nothing we can do. And because I was so pissed off, I put a selfie we'd taken on the day before it happened, that they happened to be in the background. I found it on my phone, these two guys. So I put it on Facebook and circled their faces and was like, someone recognize them, please. And it went a bit viral. And then Facebook got in contact with me and were like, that's harassment, you have to take it down. And that's when I got really pissed off. Because I was like, how can that be harassment? But what he did to me isn't. And that's when the campaign sort of kicked off, really.
Mm. Wow. I mean, firstly, thank you so much for your honesty and for sharing that vulnerability with us. We had a few questions that we wanted to ask you in terms of that trauma, you know, which is a trauma. How did you go and walk us through a bit of the experience going from feeling extremely vulnerable in pain that you've gone through an episode of trauma to finding courage? And kind of traveling through that space of vulnerability to a space of feeling incredibly brave and fronting a national campaign?
It's a really interesting question. I think the only... I think what metabolized it from me being humiliated into being able to do that was literally anger. And I think we talk a lot about anger as a negative emotion, but it can be such a motivator. Mm. Mm. So many changes have started from people being angry and just kind of not wanting to deal with that anymore. And I can tell looking back that the upskirting incident was literally the straw that broke the camel's back after years of, you know, 2015 to 2016, I was living on a boat, which is a long story. And that industry is so sexist. Mm. And that every single day, you know, shouted at by my boss for wearing a swimsuit in 30 degrees, working on a boat because I was distracting fishermen. Mm. Like this kind of stuff, having your ass grabbed in a bar, being shouted at from cars. Mm. I think the upskirting thing was just like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. Sorry, I can't. Yeah. I can't keep just ignoring this stuff anymore. It's really affecting my life now. So anger was the motivator there. And it wasn't really... The campaign started... I say the campaign started to change a little, but the campaign really started as closure. Mm. I was trying to get these guys prosecuted at first. And it very quickly turned into, okay, there's a bigger fight to fight here. But at first it was closure, I think, and from anger.
In terms of, I mean, we were talking earlier about this whole campaign is a representation of the power of one and how as an individual, as women especially, we feel helpless a lot of the time or we go through experiences and we feel like we have no power in changing that. And you are... such evidence that with willpower and research and knowledge and passion, like real change can happen. And you've changed the future for hundreds and thousands of millions of people in this country. And that for us, you know, we were incredibly emotional before you came on because I don't think we've spoken to anyone who has had such impact on the future generations. Tell us a little bit about the journey with your boyfriend and how supportive Ryan was.
Oh, God.
And that relationship.
So yeah, the support system has been. I think the my support system has been what's got me through it. People are always like, "How did you push through barriers? How did you get over that? How did you whatever?" And I genuinely think that's come from building a support system that, like, there's no one in my life that I'm close to where I feel like guilty for venting to them for 3 hours, or you know, friends where you're like, they get me, but they still think they don't really respect me, or I don't have anyone like that around
me. Or like,
me.
There's a transaction. If you're here for me, I have to be here for you.
Exactly. Yeah. There's none of that. I'm so lucky, and I've really tried to cultivate that. I've grown up with very strong relationships in my family, and I've really tried to cultivate that around me. But my boyfriend Geordie, we've been together six years. He's Australian. Australian to UK, did long distance for a while. That was fun.
I've done it. It's not the coolest thing to do.
It's the worst. But we're just best mates. And like the mutual respect between us is like, there is no living up to anything for each other. There's no, we just really dig each other as people. And I actually, on the night it happened, I didn't call him when it had happened because he was working away on a, he's an engineer, and he was working on a boat in the middle of the ocean, like 50 miles offshore. Yeah. And I was like, I really don't think it's helpful for me to be like, I've just been upskirted and basically attacked by a man, but I'm fine, but I am still here and he's still here too. Like, no one wants to get that call when they're offshore. Do you know what I mean?
But you can imagine in that state of panic, that would be just a reactionary thing to call the person closest. Yeah. So that actually takes a lot of discipline.
Yeah. When you feel violated, and that was harassment, as amongst many other things, it's all you want is somebody that you really trust to be that anchor that you can bounce this kind of frustration, this trauma off of, and that can kind of show up for you.
Yes.
But doing that for yourself, like, where did that come from? Like, who did you turn to? And how did you show up for yourself in that incident?
I feel like I was really lucky that my sister's with me. Hmm. In very, I guess, in the least weird way. I think we have hierarchy with our relationships often. And I feel really lucky that Geordie sits, my boyfriend sits in the same place as my sister in terms of trust and my family, you know. It's not like, oh, my sister's my best friend and she's a girl and my boyfriend's great, but he's a boy and I kind of want him to, there's none of that. So having my sister there and going through it all with me and crying with me and trying to dance with me and all that kind of stuff, I felt like I had that support system there and I didn't want to. It's like, I think it's such a gendered thing as well. I think we just constantly don't want to worry people. I don't want to cause a fuss. Like, you know, we all, as women, we're always like, I don't want to cause a fuss, I don't want to worry people. And I thought about that a lot. You know, I thought about not causing a fuss and not calling Geordie or whatever. I called him immediately as soon as I'd left and I was home because I was safe and he wouldn't have worried. But also through the campaign at the beginning, should I kick this campaign off? Mm. You know, the classic thing where you measure your trauma against other people's trauma. So like, okay, it wasn't the worst case scenario. It could have been way worse. So am I just causing a fuss here? You know, all that kind of questioning.
But do you not think that in itself is leaning into the fear of becoming the stereotype that we've been told that we should be for generations? Mm-hmm. We're emotional. You know, women kind of over-exaggerate. Mm-hmm. They are dramatic. So in that instance, your very subconscious understanding of all of those things that we are told that we are as women, you don't want to be.
No.
Whereas actual fact, you had full right in that situation to feel all of those things. You were just afraid of playing into that.
Exactly. And who says they're bad things as well?
Yeah. And I mean, there was absolute right for you to react in the way that you did and the way that you should have done. And it's not dramatic and it's not, you know, erratic at all. It's actually legitimate cause to create and shout about. And
yeah, I think now I look back, I see that now. I think at the time, you're just constantly worried about, like you say, like being too sensitive or causing a fuss or whatever. And now I look back and I'm like, yeah, it was legitimate and look what we've achieved from me and causing a fuss.
Who told us that we can't, this is fussy or women are dramatic or emotional?
Exactly.
Like, who tells us those things?
I'll tell you who, men. It's classic talk, like it's
patriarchy.
The patriarchy. And, you know, it happens for men as well in terms of playing into the toxic masculinity sets. Mm-hmm. You know, they feel they have to be an aggressor or a leader or take control. And actually, you know, it's just as unfair on men as well who don't want to play into those. And actually, we should just be treating, you know, we often talk about this, each other on human moral values and principles.
Exactly. Yeah. And these are the things that we've internalized and we need to rewire and acknowledge and then sort of kind of train out of us.
Yeah, unpick. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I totally agree.
I think what's so brilliant as well about what you've done, G, is, you know, upskirting is one point on the spectrum, but there are hundreds of thousands of experiences that women go through every day, whether it has been catcalled in the street, whether it's being having the lower of your back touched in a bar, which I've had several times and thought, that's nothing, that's allowed. And actually, so much of what, you know, we're trying to do at Bumble and you're trying to do with your work, Jades, and the same with you, is re-educate men and women on actually, like, what is acceptable behaviour.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't right.
Yes, exactly.
But without laws and regulation, how on earth are you supposed to know where that dial sits?
Yeah, you have to set a precedent. And with that comes, one of the reasons I'm so proud of the campaign in general is because, yes, it was a campaign to change law, and that is critical because technology is moving so fast, and the law we were using to try and prosecute this, which wasn't fully working, was 100 years old to 200 years old, which is crazy anyway.
Wow.
So that law definitely needed to be changed and that precedent be set. But also just the conversation we started, like, people are so aware of upskirting now.
Mm.
Reports for it have gone up 170% since the campaign started. Wow. That's like that's one of the only statistics that makes it feel real, that, because people say about the law change, I'm like, yeah.
That's a pretty big deal.
When you do anything, it becomes
a
reality.
Just take a second.
Change the law.
I know, but I can't compute it right now.
Okay, we'll do it for you.
In a month.
Gina changed the law, the entire law.
Law in Parliament. It's pretty much single-handedly.
Yeah.
It's weird. But those kind of statistics, the reports going up, that is like such valuable stuff to hear. And that makes me go, oh, okay, because the campaign also had a value outside of the legislation, you know?
Yeah.
It became a conversation. And that conversation leads on to a conversation of the continued violence against women and all of that stuff.
Mm.
It's bigger than just this.
Can I ask, was there a point along the campaign where you thought, wow, I'm taking on something much bigger than just me? Oh. And did you ever doubt yourself in that moment?
Yes, I doubted myself so many times. And there was, at the beginning, trying to start that and trying to get the momentum was hard enough, obviously. Mm-hmm. Then when the online abuse came from doing it, that was really hard.
What kind of online abuse?
So many rape threats.
Challenged.
Like, really graphic. I've had graphic rape threats for like a year and a half. It's unbelievable, some of them.
Wow.
And just like it's so intrusive because, like, I get my phone out to talk to my mum and dad on, we have a family messenger, to talk to my mum, dad and Stevie because I'm, I don't know, you know, feeling a bit shit or want to talk to them about, am I allowed to swear on here?
Yeah,
absolutely. Because I have 60 times already.
You also don't need to justify why you want to talk to your family.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's very true. Just talk about whatever. And you open your phone and they're just all there. So it's like, it's so intrusive because these people are continually in my pocket and I cannot get away from them.
There's no way of blocking or anything.
Well, I do, but there's just they come, there's so many. They just come back. Like they make new people have made new accounts when after I've blocked them and done the same thing on different accounts.
And so a lot of your activism work was kind of spurred by, like you said, you got really angry in the beginning, and then when you're kind of facing these kind of threats, does that anger shift into another feeling of, like, not self-doubt, but insecurity and anger in a different sense? Did it resonate differently? And
yes, it did. It morphed into a different thing. I think there's definitely a big amount of fear there. Mm. I had a case out against a guy from my school for 2 years who was stalking me in 2013 and 14, and they couldn't do anything about it, which is probably why the upskilling thing happened as well, because I was done. Mm. There's like, I'm very scared of these kind of things translating into real life. Because if I say I'm going to be doing this job at this time, I'm terrified those people are going to turn up, you know, because they're graphic stuff they send. It turned into fear, but it also turned into, there was self-doubt at the beginning, because I think the amount of pushback I got from, I hate doing this, but yes, unfortunately from men. Mm. And some older women as well, like first or second wave feminists who were like, we were fighting for fundamentals. You were fighting for, like, what is this? No one cares about upskilling. Wear pants, you know, which is a really solid argument. yeah, this pushback did make me go exactly what we said before, which was like, oh, am I talking about something too much here? Do I sound like a whining middle class? I'm not actually middle class, working class white woman who's been like, oh, this happened to me. But then that transformed into, okay, if people still think this kind of stuff, then we've got work to do. Yeah. Like, you're just proving my point as to why I need to do this work, because you don't understand.
But at some point, we can all imagine, it can just get too much.
Yeah, it does.
And the sum of, like, your passion and your commitment to wanting to do it, sometimes it can just be so clouded by the negativity that it's like, I can't push forward, which is why support and community in favour of what you were doing is and probably was really important.
I think it's everything. Because there was a lot of times where my biggest fear was, because I got so many messages, I've probably had thousands over the last 18 months from young girls or women or people who have been upskirted, but on varying levels, like 7-year-old girls from a school in Croydon, their teacher did it to them for 6 years, and they found 5,000 photos on his phone and on USB, and they couldn't arrest him because it wasn't against the law and because it's not a graphic image or whatever they said. So all these kids are messaging me, be like, please do it. They're not even old enough to vote. Like, of course they can't force change in this way that I can. So the terrifying feeling was that I wouldn't be able to finish it. Like, that really, like, makes me really sad. I know I have finished it, so it's fine, but I get really upset knowing, like, I felt so scared of not finishing it for them. So when the, like, abuse and stuff got a lot, I really had to rely on people around me to pick me back up, because... And Ryan, my lawyer as well, because he was an insane support system. It's so funny. He's not good with when I'd go to his office and cry. He'd just feed me biscuits when I cried because he didn't know how to help. It's so good.
That's very British, isn't it? Have a biscuit and a cup of tea.
Yeah. But a little biscuit, a little cup of tea. Didn't talk through everything, but he was so like, he changed my language. Like when I'd say like, if we do this, he'd be like, don't say if, we say when. So like, he was very like this throughout the whole thing. Mm. And I had to rely on those people to pick me back up, because... Yeah, to take that on alone, I think, is mental. I even now think it's mad, having done that. Yeah. But if you don't have a support system and you don't have blinkers on it, and also if you don't have the passion for it, like with activism, you don't need money, you don't need power, you don't need influence, you just need passion, because that's the only thing that keeps you going. Mm. If you care about it more than anything, that's the only reason you'll continue, because it's hard, you know?
Absolutely. Mm.
And I love it. I love it still. I'll keep doing it forever. It's just like a very hard job.
It is tough.
And you're doing a phenomenal job at it.
Thanks.
And you really
are. I'm very tired and emotional.
No, you're not emotional. You're like, that's the truth. Like, I'm tearing up right now. And so is Lou, because you're a voice for many women. And I think backlash and threats and you know, negativity, you're always going to come up against when you're a loud voice.
Yes.
And when you're forced to be reckoned
with. Especially when you're a woman as well.
People and a woman. Yeah. People are always going to have something to say. And you know what I think? You're not going to be able to please anyone. No. But if you're the voice for, like you said, those 7-year-olds, that's enough. And there's no negotiating with that.
Yes, exactly. You're absolutely right.
You're amazing.
But also in terms of like something I really believe in is that you can't get to courage without taking risks. Like the very nature of being courageous, like someone that gets given like everything, they'll never be courageous because they've never had a moment of self-doubt where they probably wouldn't win, where they've overcome adversity. Like to be courageous is like a real fortune in terms of how it feels. You feel bold, you feel powerful, you feel strong, but you have to go through really tough emotional times, often trauma, to get to that point.
I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. There's a really beautiful quote that I love that's like, I think it's remarkable people don't do remarkable things, they become remarkable from trying. And it's so true, because you're not, you don't start, like, I'm very aware now after the law change of being held up as this like feminist, like, change maker who like is a remarkable person. I really want to make it clear that I'm a regular person who just worked really hard and tried. And yes, I've done something remarkable, quote unquote, you know, by trying.
Yeah.
But I'm a very regular person. You, like you say, you become braver through pushing through that fear and going through those things, 100%.
Yeah. You mentioned your boyfriend and your sister and your family. Was there any other anchors that you had that really you kind of turned to, maybe alone when you're at home at night and your head's spinning? Like, was there anything else that you gravitate towards that gave you that strength and courage to own it and have more conviction in what you're doing?
Yeah. It's like very cliche, but Instagram. Like, all my followers on Instagram, I spent so much, I think, one bad message on Instagram. I haven't had one abusive message on Instagram for 18 months. That's mental, because the amount I've had through Twitter and Facebook and my email is unprecedented. Mm. The community on there, like, I could literally, I posted, you know, if I was sad or feeling shit or up till 5 doing work, going through the petition, writing down names till 6 a.m. and my eyes were cross-eyed or whatever. So I would post on there and just the barrage of love that came back. Like, I could have said anything. I could have just been like, I'm feeling really tired and I need a massage. Like, didn't matter. The support from that channel and from the people that follow me on there is unbelievable.
Mm.
And sometimes as well, like, you just need someone who doesn't know what you're dealing with to give you support, you know what I mean?
Well, also, when that perspective comes from outside, they're literally looking at it at face value.
Yes.
This is what she's doing and this is why she's doing it. It's not, they're not sitting in the office with you, they're not seeing you get annoyed or get upset. They're literally going, this is my agenda-free perspective and judgment on you. And that is the most honest piece of feedback, which is why it's the most powerful.
Mm. Because they don't, and also there's no,
they don't owe you anything.
No, they don't, exactly. That's exactly it. And I struggled a lot through this process with not being able to talk to anyone who understood what I was going through, because the only person I could talk to that understood it was Ryan, obviously, but he is still my lawyer.
Mm.
Like, I'm not going to sit in a room with Ryan, who is doing pro bono work till like 4 a.m. for me when he has a job, and be like, I'm really struggling. Do you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't need to take that on as well. So that was kind of my only space for just venting about stuff. And people were so kind. And I think it, just even small messages, people send me voice notes. Uh-huh. I did this one thing where they just, I did it again recently actually, but I did this one thing where people just send me loads of pictures of their dogs.
Yeah, I saw that. It made me smile. I did that so recently. Much.
And I just like sing bed, like looking through these pictures of dogs, and they're just
because
like,
you have a turtle.
You have a tortoise.
I have a tortoise. Yeah.
A toy toys.
A toy toys. That's how I say it. Tortoise.
Apparently it's tortoise.
What's wrong with tortoise? My dad says,
oh, you want to see my toy toys?
Excuse me? Come see my toy toys.
I call it Squirtle. What do you call it?
Squirtle. Squirtle.
Sorry, that's my like geeky Pokemon.
Also, your tortoise or tortoise, whatever you want to call it, is really, really fucking fast.
I know.
What are you feeding it?
Just like speed. Why?
Speed.
She's super fast. I don't know why. She's like mental. She climbs in. I go outside and she's like in the bin.
So she's as relentless and motivated as you are.
She is. My sister's got one as well, and her name is Dr. Alison Parker. And she's very busy. She's like obviously a doctor because she's like always doing stuff. She's always like stressed.
I follow your sister on Instagram, and it is one of the best accounts I follow.
Oh my God, she's great. She's like the antithesis of Instagram. She's so funny. Oh,
really, really funny.
She's great.
Yeah.
God, I'm lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, but you were saying that Instagram has been a really great support network for you, and you've used it in, because, you know, people always like kind of talk about social media and particularly Instagram as quite an insidious place, but actually it really helped you and the people that followed you really kind of got you through that, and by making like kind of light of the situation, maybe not also, because it's really hard when you're passionate about something to step out of the bubble and the kind of incubated echo chamber of what you're doing in your job, and being able to kind of talk about dogs and do something light
and be like, my toy toys is in the bin.
And we were talking about this on another episode, that kind of translates into mindfulness and doing something like laughing, which is the only time that you're present, because you're not thinking about anything or anyone else. You're just laughing. And, you know, there's times when, you know, I've been stressed or been really anxious, and what I've decided is I don't want to spend time with my brother because I just don't want to, I can't be bothered. I just want to go into my little hole, under my duvet and just sleep this stress off.
Yes.
And then he'll come round and he'll say something stupid and we'll end up laughing for half an hour and making pancakes or whatever it is. And he'll leave and I'll be like, oh my God, I feel so much better.
I know, I'm like that too.
And it's like,
you need that.
Reconditioning your mind to and hijacking it to do exactly what your mind is telling you not to do.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's almost you like really need that.
There's so much for us to think about, and I'm definitely guilty of this, that we overthink everything and then we get ourselves into this big pickle around like this matrix of problems that we think we have.
Yeah.
And of course, there are lots of challenges in life, but I found something that's really helpful is three things. When I laugh, when I watch a film, or when I play sport, or I run, I'm so distracted by my mind, which is actually a really healthy routine, that I'm so involved in that moment that when I finish it, whether it's an hour of tennis or watching something of Netflix, I actually forget what I was concerned about at the beginning.
Yes.
And I feel like mindfulness is amazing, but it can often be quite dangerous to go too heavily into overthinking everything because we end up indulging in negativity.
Yeah, you need that space as well. Yeah. That's I used to work out a lot. I haven't, obviously, for the campaign, I just haven't had the time. But I used to work out a lot, and it was like moving meditation because I wasn't focusing on anything other than that, and it was the only time in the day where my mind was on like putting one foot in front of the other. And it was so nice to not be thinking about strategy and like this and problems that could go wrong. And yeah, you need that space big time. Bradley Cooper recently said
to me
in an interview I watched with Oprah, because I've just watched A Star Is Born and it's completely emotionally killed me.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Oprah one?
Yeah.
Oh my God. When he says about, he's like, you need to be okay with silence.
Yeah.
We're so busy, and especially, I mean, in that industry he's in, he says it's like a cacophony of noise where your life is like super loud and loads going on, and then suddenly it's silent again. And you need to work at every day being okay with silence.
Yeah, he was referring to being famous, being famous, and how everyone's aspiring to this thing, but you actually have to be okay in that silent space.
With yourself.
Yeah, with yourself, exactly. When nothing's happening, when you're not on the A-list because you're not promoting your and premiering your new movie. It's like, what happens when you're not number one?
Yes.
And I think for us, that also means not, you know, being in silence isn't being in silence on Instagram. It's putting your phone away and being present in
your mind. And you are when you're by yourself, with yourself.
Yes, exactly. Mm. That's critical. You have to know that. And that relates so well to our lives because we're so busy and we're just constantly on. And sometimes you need to just not be on for a small amount of time.
And speaking of that, like, how do you find now you've come like immeasurable steps and you've changed the law, and now, like you said a moment ago, you feel like you've been placed on this pedestal as this remarkable person, which you are, but do you feel something's shifted being portrayed in that way within you? Do you feel, how do you feel about that?
I feel less in control of, I feel more in control of my career and less in control of how I'm perceived. Which is fine, very lucky. But the whole reason I didn't start this work to do this bit, even though this bit is great and all the opportunities I'm getting now, they're wonderful, very privileged. But I didn't begin the work for that. I was doing it silently when no one knew about it for a long time.
Yeah.
So I just need to make sure that I use these opportunities to go back to the starting point of why I started it, which is why I'm writing the book and why I want to do work that actually helps people, not is just like, my worst fear is that now all the media I do is like, look, the upskirting girl changed the law, and that's like all I am now. And it's all about me. It's not actually about me, and it was never about me. That's why I did the campaign, you know? So I'm very aware of making sure that my work actually adds value and isn't just me talking about my feminist opinions or my experience and how I think I'm a remarkable person or how other people think I'm a remarkable person. Like, it could very easily become this
I completely
thing.
Agree. I feel like this year recently I was saying to like my team, and I spoke to Leo, I was like, I don't want to do panels anymore because I think it can become really not self-indulgent but almost a little bit hollow because the purpose was why you did it. And tuning into your why and like knowing why you care about something can push you to like build and create and dismantle and rewire and change so much. And that is what's your legacy. And that's kind of, you know, the people that the hearts that you're going to touch or in a really cheesy way or whatever. But like, that's real change.
Yeah.
Sitting on a panel and talking to somebody about what you believe in, you know, it can trigger ideas and thoughts, but I'm a doer, not a sayer.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. I want to lead by example and action. I don't want to just talk about what I want to do.
And I think, unless what you're talking about is educating people on how they can do the same.
Which is what I'm, that's my plan.
Which is what the book
exactly.
will do.
Yeah. So it's about being clever with my choices. Like you say, and I've, you know, I was doing panels at the beginning of this campaign when I first started doing panels about the law change and stuff. And just, I noticed I'm just sitting on a panel of four very privileged white women being like, yeah, life's really hard. It's like, how does that help anyone, you know? And I need to be, I'm still doing panels, but I'm being very specific about what I choose now.
Yeah.
Is this going to add value to someone's life? Am I the person who should be saying this? There's questions to ask now because now I have options.
Well, also when people are looking at you as a responsible figurehead, you know, we often talk about, we talk about it a lot in the office, you know, we have a responsibility. So that responsibility has to lead with real knowledge, real research, statistics that are backed up, because people are looking at us as an example of how to run their lives.
Yes.
And with that comes a remarkable amount of duty of care.
Yeah. Yes. I really don't take that lightly. I'm trying to customize in my head now exactly how my career goes so that I can make sure that it's adding serious value.
Can I ask, for somebody that doesn't know about the political system or changing the law, like in a really brief overview, how you kind of managed to change that?
Yes. So brief overview would be, shortest version of the story is basically created a social media campaign. So awareness on social media about the issue, that it wasn't a sexual assault offence, creating petitions, did sort of paid Facebook ads with petition sites, spoke about it to women's charities, all the right people who were sympathetic to that issue. So got an awareness campaign on social media to a point, not massive.
How many people did you get to sign that petition overall?
In the end, it was 110,000.
Wow.
But it was, I did the social media campaign as in the posting and the petition at the very beginning. And then I, even when it was on sort of 5,000, I packaged all that up, that interest on social media. And then I gave it to producers and traditional media like newspapers and TV shows and said, hey, listen, people are, here's my story. Here's what happened. Here's why I can't prosecute. Here's what I want to change. And people are interested in it. Do you want to talk about it?
How did you get in contact with the right people?
Oh, I just absolutely stalked the hell out of everyone on the internet.
Just on like
Twitter,
LinkedIn?
Twitter. Okay. Twitter's like what LinkedIn wishes it was. Because you can find anyone on Twitter. You put in any brand name or whatever, you can always find out who works for what area. You can slide into their DMs. Like LinkedIn is there's lots of barriers there. And also, do you really want to know people knew I was looking at their profile?
Exactly. And sorry, that premium price is too expensive.
I can't
Twitter's
pay
free.
That. Yeah, exactly.
So from then?
Yes. So got all the right contacts. And then just most of my campaign was just asking people for favours and bashing emails to people and not stopping. That's what campaigning is a lot of the time. And yeah, got producers to, got booked on a couple of shows. I think it was Good Morning Britain, where they asked me if I wanted to debate opposite someone, a female police officer who spent literally the whole show telling me I should have worn trousers and the police have more important shit to deal with than me getting upskirted.
Nice.
So that was like, I could have taken that as, I don't want to do that because I'm going to look like an idiot. Or I could have done what I did, which was like, yes, put me on TV with a live troll because that'll get the campaign more support.
Oh, like sit in front of a young girl. Because I would have taken that as, you know, being on live TV and somebody with a really strong opinion can be quite threatening and it can make you feel really belittled.
And it definitely
did. And especially if you're up against all these threats already, do I even have the strength to do that?
But I was terrified. I had my friends around the night before, my friend Ray, and we discussed what her... I asked the producers to give me her angle and they did. And me and Ray, my friend, discussed what she was going to say and like what the response was. So it had like pointers going in. But I knew that putting the conversation out there and having someone tell me to wear trousers and to be able to sit in front of a victim of sexual assault and be like, well, actually... And in the climate we're in now, Me Too hadn't happened then, but we were still talking a lot about this. We were starting to have these discussions, so I knew that there was going to be backlash and it would be in my favour. So that was actually a good support for the campaign. So I did that.
So you leveraged a troll to your advantage.
And put yourself on the line.
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. To show people what I was up against, really.
But in order to do that, you have to be incredibly vulnerable.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. So, but I think people appreciate... People appreciate vulnerability. I realise that more as I get older.
Yeah.
I think we all try to be so strong and perfect all the time, but people want to see normalcy and they want to see vulnerable.
Yeah, and there's that interesting idea around oversharing and like authentic vulnerability. I don't know how we can navigate that and decide that, but I think there is this climate of like oversharing and be vulnerable, but actually there's power in not necessarily always doing that and sharing everything, but just positioning yourself
choosing
in the right
moments.
Spaces. Absolutely. Yeah, choosing your moments.
100%. Yeah, I totally agree. So I did that, did a couple of TV shows. Then obviously everything that came out on social to support those appearances, I was on every comment box being like, hey, I'm the girl from the video. I'm trying to get this sorted. Can you sign this petition? Then I got all the producers to make sure they put everything in their show notes. And then that was going alongside the petition, which was doing Facebook posts. So there was, and I was asking people I knew who had some kind of influence on some kind of scale or were sympathetic to the cause. My sister's a comedian and a journalist. So it was like, okay, let's get the editor of this to tweet about it. Let's get your comedian friend. Let's get Nish Kumar to tweet about it. Let's get people to talk about it. Literally, the crappest version of influencer marketing ever.
It's like nano marketing.
It was me being like, please. Did that and then started to get a bit of momentum in terms of the petition, got like 10,000 signatures, then did more media, then realised I was doing media being like, someone should change this. And then was like, get off your ass and try and change it yourself. Like, why not me? I probably won't be able to do it, but I'll give it a go. Just probably, if I'm honest, just so I can feel like at least I tried because I've got this far and I was so bored of the whole thing. And so obviously, critically at that point, I was like, I have no political background. I have no legal background. I scraped by in school academically. I'm incredibly creative, but bad at science, maths, English, any of that stuff. So I need a lawyer. So then I went to big law firms, went for human rights organisations and asked them how to get a lawyer for free. Went to big law firms, found out they do pro bono work, got loads of offers. Most of them were ego trips. Like, I've been watching Changes Forever, like, blah, blah, blah. This guy was like, it's your thing. You've done amazing work up to this point. Whatever I can do to help. Met with him. And then that's when everything changed because Ryan is a political genius. And we came up with a political strategy, or like three really different strategies that would change the law. And I did a media strategy and like an awareness and advocacy strategy that would go alongside that. And then we just set about, we looked at the goal, worked backwards, and then set about how we would make that happen. And if A failed, we'd go for B. And if B failed, we'd go to C. And then we just did that for a year and just forced it as much as we could until we got into Parliament, got a bill tabled. And that's kind of where it began properly, I guess.
Amazing.
Was that quick? I wasn't really that quick. It's very
What was the time frame of this? So how long from like episode to bill being passed?
Are July 8th, 2017, upskirted. And then last week of July, I launched it. Ryan came on board in August, not long after, 2 or 3 weeks after I got upskirted, Ryan was on board. And then bill passed 19th February 2019. So we're looking at like 20 months.
Wow.
Fairly quick in politics. Wow. Feels like a lifetime. I've grown a beard and I've aged about 50 years, but fine.
It's probably because you spent a lot of time in Parliament with a lot of 50-year-olds.
Yeah. Like old white middle-class men.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Well, you look fantastic.
You do.
Thank you.
And we're so grateful you came on to share.
We are
that.
So grateful
to
have had
Thanks
you.
For
but
having
we
me.
Also
I love
have
you both.
This is something good... for you.
Yes.
Every guest.
I feel so bad. Every time we say this, they get really excited. And
don't get excited.
It's a dog. Oh my God, I can't believe you're your dog.
Oh my God. I would have kept it for myself.
Imagine. It's another turtle.
It's another toy toys.
It's a toy toys.
Well, we believe that like great conversations happen over food, over the dinner table.
This is true.
Come to my house and the first thing you'll do is you'll get fed.
Yes.
believe anytime, my door's always open. We believe that our guests deserve something little whilst they're on the show too. I like to bring in something that reminds me of the guest, and
Thank
Louise
you.
Brings something that brings a little bit more joy and light to a podcast.
So I try and make them laugh.
And she is hilarious. And
she is. She's very funny.
I'm not sure about this.
Me and Lou like spend probably half of our meetups and conversations just laughing and then being like, okay, we need to do some work.
I love that. What a joy though.
It really is.
The best.
Or do we need to take life more seriously?
No, probably please don't. So. Because, oh, no, you can't. You can't take life.
You really can't.
So
Absolutely
I got
can't.
You two things. And
it kind of represents the journey of where you've come. I've got you a tin of beer, a tin of lemonade and a lemon.
Oh my God.
And this represents, I feel, how something started at a festival that spearheaded a movement where you've turned a moment into lemonade.
Oh.
And I feel like when life gives you lemons, do something about it and make it
That's
sweet.
So cute.
However hard
That's
it can be.
That's so cute. I love that. It's so cute. Give me a kiss.
Come on, Jada.
So adorable. As you got the lemons out, I was like... Life gives you lemons.
It's not
when
edible.
When life upskirts, you make lemonade.
Yeah, exactly. Literally. Or you can mix the beer and lemonade and then squirt a little bit of lemon in it and see
I love
how that
these.
Goes down.
I love these so much. I actually said that when you came in. I saw like a bit of it and I was like, oh my God, I love lemon.
Danielle in the corner needs full credit for purchasing that lemonade.
Yes, yeah. Danielle, I love you.
You made the choice, Danny.
That's adorable. Thank you so much.
No, that's absolutely fine.
Okay, so mine is a little bit more complex. So I have you a banana because you appealed.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, I hate myself.
No, I love
you. This is so different to Parliament.
You appealed for something that you really believed in and you proved everyone fucking wrong and you went after it. And you dominated the space and the scene and you inspire us. I said to Jada when we were coming up with the guest for this podcast, you've got to meet this girl called Gina Martin. If I have kids, I want them to spend time with her, follow her direction. Honestly, I was like in tears around the boardroom downstairs, being like, out of everyone I know, you're the person that we need to have on here. So,
oh, so
thank you for inspiring me and enjoy your delicious banana.
God, that's the best. I was like, who's this Gina enjoy your banana?
Who's this Gina Martin, Lou? And she's like, Jada, you have to meet her. I want her, like... She would have to. I
want to marry
her. And I was like, "You're trusting with your children? What the hell does she do? Who is this girl?"
Yeah, like everything.
That's so
and
cute.
I got you some.
Also love bananas, so that's great.
Good. You can have it with your bit.
I will.
And I got you some romaine lettuce because you remained
Oh my god! What is the next
Carry
word?
On. You remained unaffected by trolls, negativity. You remained.
Oh my god! And I also
passionate.
Voted Remain.
And you voted. You know, Remain.
We all. Well, I voted Remain.
So did I. So here's some Remain letters because we should Remain.
That is so great. Also, if you voted Leave, you could have voted Leaf. So let's just think about that.
Oh yeah. Okay. Stop so it. Either way, we're open to both.
Oh, Ish. That's so sweet. Thank you so much.
So thank you so
that's
much.
That's like
thank
the
you.
Weirdest and best gifts I've ever got.
So enjoy your dinner.
I can't wait to eat my banana with my lettuce and my lemon. I'm so excited.
And your beer.
It's a simple salad.
Such a simple but effective.
I wish I'd brought you guys something. I didn't. I'm the worst.
No, don't we don't. This isn't transactional. This
you brought us a bill that is passed. So I think, I think you've done your bit.
Deal. Yeah. Done.
Before we leave, so the podcast is called Unsubscribe. And it really is been born out of me and Jada thinking around all of the negativity that surrounds us all the time and really wanting people that listen to this to know that they don't have to subscribe to negative things in their life and that there are tools and individuals and inspirational people around us that are doing things to challenge what their subscriptions are and re-subscribe and think about acting in healthier, happier ways. So we're asking all of our guests to let us know something that they want to still unsubscribe from. So you subscribe to changing something that you believed in, but what is it in your current day-to-day life or that you're currently battling with that you still feel that you could unsubscribe from?
I think I need to unsubscribe from the idea that I have to be one thing. As in, when I was little, it was like, what am I going to be when I grow up? And I really wish someone had been like, what things are you going to be when you grow up? Like, I will be continually evolving. My career will always evolve. I will evolve as a person and I don't have to be one thing to be good at something. And I think I'll have a better life and career for that.
And
for
also,
unsubscribing to that.
You don't have to be anything when you grow up, because when you grow up, you're still going to want to do other things. It doesn't. You don't hit a glass ceiling at 21 or 22.
It doesn't stop because you're older and you're like, well, I'm done now with learning.
I'm actually unsubscribing from asking that question.
Done. Love it.
But thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. And yeah, we really appreciate
it. Yay. Bye.
That's it from us today.
If you like what you heard, we would love to know your thoughts. Rate, review, and share with a friend you think might like this also.
Unsubscribe is powered by Fourth Floor Creative and brought to you by Bumble, the social network where it's never too late to make the first move.